carrefour des arts. Une émission de la rédaction de Canal Académie. On retrouve Christa Leuc.
Peter Bruegel, the elder, one of the most outstanding figures of 16th century Flemish painting. A short life, but an intensely creative career. Some 45 paintings completed in only 15 years, a dozen of them now in the Kunsthistorisches Museum in Vienna. And as we approach the end of the Lenten season, the Christian world remembers the Way of the Cross. This painting by Bruegel, The Way to Calvary, finds here its singular place. Canal Académie has discovered a book, which might be described as confidential, entirely devoted to the examination and analysis of this important work. Its author, Michael Francis Gibson, has kindly come to our studio to tell us about it. Good afternoon, Michael Gibson.
Good afternoon, Christa Leuc.
Let me first introduce you briefly to our listeners. You are an art historian, art critic and novelist who writes both in English and in French. In the course of a long and productive career, you have written for such publications as the International Herald Tribune, the New York Times, Art in America or Connaissance des Arts, etc. And as a writer, you have published a monograph devoted to Dadaism and Marcel Duchamp, called Duchamp Dada, which obtained the International Art Book Award of the Vasari Prize in 1991. And other monographs include works on Paul Gauguin or Odilon Redon and the symbolist art published by Taschen or Alexandre Calder. And the last few years were almost entirely devoted to a monumental trilogy, Chronicles of the Greater Dream, published under the mysterious signature of Miguel Errazu. But let's return to The Mill and the Cross, a handsome tome with a mass of illustrations, a book which, the matter is unusual enough to deserve special mention, is the point of departure of a poetic fiction now in preparation with the Polish film director Lech Majewski. So, to begin with, Michael Gibson, would you please tell us why you chose to write about Bruegel and about this painting in particular?
Well, I think in particular, in the first place, because I am very fond of the work of Bruegel. I think that started when I was a child. I had a reproduction of Hunters in the Snow in my room. And I chose The Way to Calvary because it's a unique painting from several points of view. For one thing, it is a large painting, but it's actually painted like a miniature. Stylistically, it's very original, as we shall see. It has an original narrative method. It's crawling with figures, about 500 characters running about the painting. And it also introduces a twofold subject in a way that allows Bruegel to develop an overall narrative of the world and a reflection on history, which justifies one calling him or describing him as the Shakespeare of Flanders. Above all, there are four questions that the painting brings up. The first one being, why is Christ so well hidden in the middle of this throng? Why is the mill placed so high on a strange rock? Why is the group of the Virgin with the Holy Women and St. John treated in a completely different style from the rest of the painting? And why are the soldiers leading Christ to Golgotha preceded by a banner with the Habsburg double eagle?
Many artistic mysteries.
Yes, indeed.
Big questions, yes. And maybe you could begin by positioning the painting in its period and the artist's career and mentioning its main characteristics.
Briefly, to begin with, the painting was painted in 1564. That's the year that Bruegel's first son, Peter the Younger, was born. Bruegel,
yes, he had two sons.
He had two sons, Peter and Jan. Mm. He was married the preceding year in 63, and until then he'd lived in Antwerp. After 63 and after his marriage, he lived in Brussels. Now, I think there is bearing not particularly between this painting and the birth of his son, but between the Adoration of the Magi, which is in London, and the birth of his son. I always suspect that the Virgin in that painting was a portrait of his own wife just after she bore the first son. Anyway, the historical context is the following. Bruegel lived in Antwerp until the preceding year, and aside from living in this very animated cultural context, he also witnessed very severe political and religious repression by the Spanish regime, which was, after all, the King of Spain was the lord of the Lowland countries. And he wanted to impose the Spanish policy of orthodoxy on these Low Countries.
Yeah, which was under reform.
The Reformation, yes.
Mm, or Reformation, yes. And could maybe, for our listeners, could you make a description of the painting? Because there are so many, many figures and so many scenes that it is very difficult. But maybe you, as the big specialist, maybe you can dare to give a description of this painting.
Yes, well, in a sense, you might somehow compare it to a Jackson Pollock overall painting, because there, as you say, there are a lot of figures. There are about 500 characters walking around in the painting. As I have said, it's large miniature. It's 124 by 170 centimeters, which is pretty big. And it's unfortunate for the visiting public that they can only see it from a distance of about 1 meter. I had the privilege of standing on a stool in front of it.
In Vienna
during an entire morning with a magnifying glass in hand. And I was able to discover a lot of details that nobody ever sees, but and which are reproduced in the English version of my book. Now, I think to sort of give the general setting of the painting, I should say that the visitor sees the sort of narrative whole of the thing, which is unfolds in a large landscape. This landscape can be divided into three circles. The major circle is that of the crowd going from the city, which is to the left, to Golgotha, which is to the right. The city itself is a circle within its walls. Golgotha is a circle marked by a crowd of people in black clothes waiting for the execution. And the movement of the crowd goes mainly from the town to Golgotha, although there are some who are going into town to sell their wares, their farmers, their shepherds, and so forth. Now, one may say more generally that to the left of the painting, we have sunlight, we have life, we have a living tree. To the right of the painting, we have a thunderstorm coming in. We have a wheel on top of a large tree trunk for executing criminals. And we have a horse's skull, and we have the place of execution. So we have on the right,
the sunny sky.
On the left, we have life, the sunny sky. On the right, we have death.
Mm. With the dark sky.
With the dark sky, yes.
It's very important also, the skies, yes.
And we can see from the direction of the clothes and the wind that the wind is coming from the side with the clouds. Now, there is also a group of the Virgin with the Holy Women and St. John are in the foreground, which are treated in a different style. We can talk about that in a moment. And there are two men standing to the extreme right of the scene, one of them dressed in white, which I have concluded is a self-portrait of Bruegel, which apparently is also the opinion of other art historians.
And at the extreme right, yes.
At the extreme right, yes. Mm. Next to the wheel. And with him is a man dressed in black who is absolutely overwhelmed by what he is seeing. So what the spectator sees is first a sort of mass of anecdotal details. The children jumping over puddles, playing with one another, people socializing and so forth. And above all, and that I must still mention, there is dominating this entire scene a large improbable rock, surmounted by an equally improbable windmill. And, of course, one of the questions is, what is the windmill doing there?
Yes, well, maybe that's a very interesting question, which we might have a look maybe a little later when we are going to see the different scenes in detail.
Yes, indeed.
And also, Michael Gibson, you say that the painting tells two different stories. What is that?
Well, it obviously tells the story of the Passion of Christ. But a viewer will get may get a strange impression when he looks at it, because, for instance, he will notice that there are people, for instance, there's a woman in the foreground with an apron, and in the pocket of her apron is a rosary. Now, this is not an anachronism. It's, in fact, the other aspect of the story. Bruegel is using the story of the Passion to tell the story of the ordeals of Flanders under the Spanish rule in his day. This requires a little historical background.
Yes, please.
When Charles V in 1555 entrusted the Netherlands to his son, Philip II, Philip was living in Brussels, which was then a small burg, while Antwerp was the great cosmopolitan centre of Northern Europe. And more business was done there in 1 month than in Venice in a single year, an entire year. Now, unfortunately, the fate of this great city was sealed by the active presence of the Reformation in the lowlands, which determined Philip to implement his father's edicts, which required that heretics, as seditious persons disruptive of our state and the common peace, should be put to death, the men by the sword and the women buried alive. So Bruegel was witness to many such executions. Some of them were very imaginative in other ways too, and sons of prominent people were also executed in this way, or ran the risk of being executed. Even court painter had to intercede for his son. So, nonetheless, the Flemish towns at the time had a tradition of urban civic independence, and they were very touchy about their prerogatives. And in 1561, there was a great celebration in Antwerp, where Bruegel lived, which was known as the Landjuweel, which was, in fact, a meeting of the chambers of rhetoric of the various cities of the Low Countries. And just to give you an idea of the scale of the thing, 2,000 speakers took part in this thing, and they entered into the city in a great procession. The entire city was transformed with painted scenery. The streets were changed. There was an escort of princes and princesses. The speakers wore silk and pearls, and they poured in from 10 different cities. They went through 40 triumphal arches with music of fifes, and they rode into the city where every street was transformed with banners, princes, etc., etc., and 23 triumphal cars and 200 carts decorated by the Artists Guild, the Lucas Guild, of which Bruegel was a member. So they competed for an entire month, and the entire city was fascinated by all this, obviously.
It was not the only city.
But I mean, that was the one. Yes. They were the host to all the chambers of rhetoric that particular year.
Yes.
And close friends of Bruegel played a prominent part in the event, which culminated in an uproar when the assembled chambers of rhetoric of the 10 different cities took a collective stand in favor of the Reformation. This had consequences. The mayor, Antoine van Stralen, was arrested. He was later released, but then 5 years later, when the Duke of Alba came with 10,000 Spanish soldiers, he was arrested again and he was decapitated. So you can see that these things were very strong and serious experiences which were already coming to a head when Bruegel painted this.
Yes, so, does this historical background reflect in the painting?
Yes, and the soldiers in red who were escorting the condemned men were a mercenary force employed by the Spaniards
by
in
the
Flanders.
Yes,
they are preceded by a Habsburg banner.
By the Spanish Habsburg dynasty.
Yes.
And the second story is the Passion
Is the Passion
Christ.
Itself, yes. Well, you can see Christ in the middle, as we have said, and the two thieves in a cart with two monks who are comforting them as they are on their way to their execution. Mm-hmm. So it's a double story and a historical... It's comparison. It's a morality play, in a sense, which is the identification of the condemned men of the Reformation with the condemned Christ.
Mm-hmm. Well, after this large historical look or background of the painting, I suggest we make a short break. before we invite you, to describe some of the most characteristic details of the way to Calvary. With Michael Francis Gibson, the author of The Mill and the Cross, Peter Bruegel's Way to Calvary. And Michael Gibson will now allow us to take a closer look at some details of the famous painting by Peter Bruegel. For instance, this strange mill on its high perch. What can you tell us about it?
Well, I was perplexed by that also. Because it's very impractical. I mean, what is the mill doing up on top of a very tall rock?
Yes.
How do you get the grain up there? How do you get the flour down from there? It doesn't really make sense, excepting for the wind. But the idea came to me that in antiquity, the mill was a standard metaphor for the starry skies that turn above our heads. And let's say in French, for instance, people will call Bruegel a septentrional painter, septentrional, which comes from the Latin term septentriones. Now, the septentriones was the name of the Big Dipper, the Roman name, the Latin name for the Big Dipper. And what does it mean? It means the seven oxen. Why oxen? Because if the heavens are a mill, the Big Dipper, the stars of the Big Dipper, are the seven oxen that make it turn around all the time indefinitely. So this is a sort of analogy, astronomical analogy, that one finds in other parts of the world. And just as in the mythology of the time, just as the earthly mill crushes grain to produce flour, so too the complicated movements of the heavenly mill in the perception, the poetic perception of that period, ground human destiny out of substances unknown. And this, of course, is the imaginative foundation of astrology. So in these mythic terms, the death of Christ was thought to put an end to the rule of cosmic fate, because you had the succession of the ages of the world, the ages of the ram, the age of fish, the Pisces, the age of
Aquarius,
and now, so forth, yes. Which is now. Every 2,000 years, you have a different constellation which appears on the horizon in the springtime. And much was made of this because it was felt that this marked the end of an age and the end of the fall of empires and the return of the coming of a new world. And so the idea that the age of Christ was the age of Pisces meant that some fundamental change was coming about in this particular point of view. So in terms of this mythic tradition, Christ's death put an end to the idea that people had been led to entertain concerning the absolute sovereignty of causal fate, signified by the archaic figure of the cosmic mill. That's my explanation in any case.
It is absolutely fascinating, really. If you stand to admire this painting in the museum, you would never have all these fantastic developments in your thought. And so another scene which seems to be very important are the Holy Women and St. John, which seem to be painted in an unusual manner.
In a completely different style, yes. They are in the foreground. Mary is completely devastated. She seems on the point of fainting. St. John is holding her up, so to speak. And the two other holy women are on their knees with their hands to their faces, weeping. But they're painted in an archaic style, the style of Van Eyck or Van der Weyden. I mean, it's obviously a stylistic quotation. They are not painted in the same style as all the rest of the people in the painting.
Yes.
When you look at the painting with a magnifying glass, you see how swift Bruegel's brushstroke is. He really dashes these figures off. And here it is a very accurately, carefully painted in the old style, and their figures are different. Also, the peasants are all rather dumpy, whereas these figures are elongated. They have long arms and long fingers and long legs, and they're very sublimated. They represent a sort of transcendental world of tragedy in this everyday world where people are sort of locked into their daily concerns.
Mm. Yes, that is also a very interesting interpretation, yes. And what about Christ himself? He's quite difficult to spot in the crowd.
Yes, Bruegel was very clever about that. In fact, he's exactly in the middle of the painting, but he dressed Christ in a grey robe, which you don't notice. It's a colour that just doesn't stand out. And in front of him, he puts a man in a white shirt on a white horse. So what you notice, the first thing you really notice when you look at the painting practically, is this white horse.
Yes.
And then if you look at the man, you see that he's turning around and scowling. What's he scowling at? Behind him, there's a scuffle. What's the scuffle about? There's some soldiers who are trying to lead away an old man, or sort of, let's say, a man in his maybe 60 years old, and his wife is clinging to his arm and trying to prevent them from doing so. This is Simon of Cyrene. They're trying to bring him to help Christ carry his cross because he's fallen beneath the weight of his cross and they can't get him to stand up. And around them, you have men running off in all directions because they are afraid that if Simon is too difficult, they will be the ones who will be taken. So the eye is led away from the center of the painting by following this movement of the people who are going this way and that way.
Mm.
And it's only gradually that we begin to focus on what actually is happening in the center. But this is something which is in the Flemish tradition. Van Eyck painted a Way to Calvary, which was also had this figure of Christ lost in the crowd. And it is particularly characteristic of Bruegel in his Fall of Icarus, in the numbering in Bethlehem, in the conversion of St. Paul, and so forth. The main scene is not noticed.
And not so evident.
In fact, it escapes the notice of the crowd.
Mm.
And I always like to quote the idea of the German philosopher Ernst Bloch, who talks about the incognito of the light. In other words, the very significant event which is going to change the course of history is an event which is not noticed when it happens.
Another thing which seems very strange is that very few people in this crowd appear to be concerned with the condemned man.
Yes,
because Christ is not the only condemned man. There are
the two thieves also, who are in a cart, and they're being escorted by their two monks sitting with them, holding up crucifixes, which would be paradoxical if it happened in Christ's time. But if it's something which happens in Bruegel's own day, one understands that these are two heretics who are being taken to be put to death. And the crowd is completely absorbed in its own activities. The children are playing, they're pole vaulting across puddles, they are wrestling together, the people are socializing, men are taking their hats off to other men, and so forth and so on. And there are only a few characters who actually notice what is the central theme of the subject. There are a few women who have this typically feminine gesture of dismay with their hands raised to their temples. And there, next to the group of the holy women, there are two women in the crowd dressed in flowing black robes with a very sort of Rubensian attitude of their hands.
Mm.
Their mouths open. They are apparently horrified by what they see. And then you have the figure of Bruegel himself, who is watching the scene with his neighbor, who is dressed in black, and who is absolutely overwhelmed and weeping, apparently.
You're talking about these two men next to the, how do you call it?
Next to the wheel, yes.
To the wheel.
There's a wheel on the dead tree trunk, which is where they executed people.
And one of these two figures is supposed, your interpretation, is supposed to be?
Is to Bruegel himself.
Yes.
Well, Bruegel is positioning himself as an observer of the scene. And I mean, I happen to conclude this by analyzing the painting for several months.
In this artistic cultural period, it happens sometimes that the painters would hide themselves amongst the
In the crowd, yes, absolutely, yes. You have that in the Flemish primitives. And I was pleased to see that in the notice next to the painting in the Kunsthistorisches Museum, they also thought this was probably Bruegel.
Oh, yes. And did they sign it by Michael Francis Gibson?
Somebody else had found it before me. But, I mean, it's simply the sort of thing that you conclude when you start going into a painting like this, which is so complicated and complex.
Yes, especially this one.
With cultural references and historical references.
Yes. Unfortunately, we have come to the end of our talk, but I wouldn't let you go before you say something about this fantastic project of a film based on the same way to Calvary.
Yes, this is a project that was initiated by the Polish film producer Lech Majewski, who is also a video artist, who has produced a number of important films, including The Night, The Gospel According to Harry, The Doze Room, Wojaciech, Angelus, and The Garden of Earthly Delight, and who's also had several retrospectives recently, one in the MoMA in New York, in the National Gallery in Washington, at the Art Institute in Chicago, and at the Venice Biennale. So he's
quite familiar with this artistic scene.
He's very artistic himself. He has a strong visual perception. And we are planning to do this film with the participation of Charlotte Rampling.
Oh, yes.
Which means that Majewski has found a landscape which corresponds roughly to the one in the painting, and he wants to reconstruct the scene before we, let's say, the light comes, and when the light returns, we are in the painting, and the audience can then follow the same events, the same characters that they'd seen in the film before, as the camera moves through the painting and brings out all the fantastic details that you can't really see from 1 meter away, but which only a film can reveal.
Yes, this must really be an absolutely great project, and of course we wish you much luck to realize it. Is it already on the way?
It's in preparation now.
The
script has been written, and we're in the final phase.
Mm-hmm. So after this journey through Bruegel's world, let me thank you very much, Michael Francis Gibson, for your really fine research and your highly innovative approach to this major opus. And your perceptive eye leads us and the listeners of Canal Académie through the story of Christ's passion as told in Bruegel's Way to Calvary, which can be admired, as I've said, at the Kunsthistorisches Museum at Vienna. On our homepage of Canal Académie, you'll also find the references of the book by Michael Francis Gibson, The Mill and the Cross, Peter Bruegel's Way to Calvary, published by Akatos at Lausanne in Switzerland. Thank you so much, Michael Francis Gibson.
Thank you, Christa.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.